Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Vente 180, served up by Wendy's. Butch Spiridon, who was at the forefront of the pitch from the city of Nashville to the NFL for the NFL draft. He'll join us today at 12:05. Looking forward to that. Chad, I'm looking forward to our next guest, an analytical approach to what Vegas has done.
Let's get into the nuts and bolts of this so we can figure out exactly how this catastrophe of an expansion team possibly winning a Stanley Cup happened to any league out there. We're talking about the NHL here, but really sort of an unprecedented move with Vegas.
Nick Mercadante is with hockey-graphs.com. Great analytical approach. You can check him out on the recent PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich.
I say unprecedented. It happened with the St. Louis Blues when there were 12 teams in hockey. And eight of the 12 teams made the playoffs. They went all the way in year one to the Stanley Cup final, but didn't win it.
Nick, thank you for the time. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think everybody's kind of scratching their heads, and I think it was a little different when the Blues did it than it is today with 31 teams. Pretty wild.
Nick, rewind nearly a year. Did most analysts think that Vegas stumbled through their expansion draft?
Well, I think a lot did. I think that a lot of analysts also, though, acknowledged that there were a couple teams that might have gifted them some key components to, you know, what is now their current run. And it didn't all come through the draft, though some of it did. And you could start in net with Marc-Andre Fleury.
You know, it was we were talking with David Poile from the Preds last year leading up to the expansion draft and discussing sort of the decisions he had to make. And, you know, he was really bemoaning the fact that, hey, guys, we're going to lose a great player. He said there are no really easy decisions to make here. And, of course, it came down to James Neal or Cali Yarncroke, and he went with the future in Cali Yarncroke. But David Poile was one of the first people I can remember telling us and saying, this team is going to be good. When you look across the league and see some of the guys that are going to be available in this expansion draft, do you feel like David Poile may have known something was coming here with Vegas, or do you think a lot of other GMs maybe shared that opinion of how this was going to happen?
Yeah, I don't know if other GMs shared that opinion. I think that David Poile is, you know, one of the best and brightest that there is. He probably saw it in terms of that there are a lot of good players in this league. You can only protect so many on a team. And some of the deeper teams, like the Preds, are going to have to give up some talent. And in some of the talent that had to be given up by some of these teams was can't-miss type of talent. James Neal, you know, he might not have been the future of the Preds, but he's going to put pucks in the net. He's going to score goals. He's done it his entire career wherever he's gone. So, you know, for teams that maybe could protect those core players, it was surprising when you saw some of the players that they didn't protect, and then some of the kind of gyrations that they went through to you know, give a reason why they didn't protect them. Maybe it was a contract thing. They thought they were being paid too much. Maybe in the case of Florida, for instance, it just wasn't their guys. So you saw some players that were left out there that I truthfully didn't think would be left out there or should have been left out there. And then it leads to these kind of can't-miss selections in the draft. So, you know, Vegas didn't have to do a great job drafting everybody, but there were a couple players that were out there where you know that they're going to get taken. You know they're going to contribute, and they were left there kind of just for the taking. So if they did the expansion draft again, I don't know how it would go. I don't know if it would be the same sort of thing. Maybe, you know, more GMs have learned their lesson on that type of stuff.
Nick Mercadante with us. So, Nick, what you're saying is if every general manager across the league, if they were doing their job at the highest level when protecting players, Vegas would not be the team they are right now.
I don't think, you know, it's hard to predict these things. And I think that even the brightest analytical thinkers are trying to piece this thing together. How did this team or how did an expansion team do as well as they did? And, you know, they're getting contributions up and down the lineup. So it's not just those guys that I alluded to, those can't miss guys that are contributing. I mean, they've got guys that came out of the woodwork, so to speak. So, it's hard to say. It really is. And I know that's not a satisfying answer. The one thing I will say is that I think that from a strategic standpoint, they got a really good coach who, maybe took the restrictor plates off for some of these players that hadn't gotten an opportunity before, let them fail, didn't make them feel like they had to look over their shoulder. And I think it led to some success on the ice. So, some of that stuff is, you know, it's harder to predict from numbers. And it's more just that they had the right environment and a decent enough group of guys to make a run. And, you know, so we're all trying to piece this thing together, and it's very, very, very hard. And that it's not satisfying for those other teams that haven't made it, that have spent so much time trying to make it, for Vegas to come along and do it in their first year.
I want to take a look at that system in Vegas and the coaching method that you're getting to, because the players have a freedom in the way that they play, not a lot of requirements with their system. And they've responded very well. Can you explain the Cliff Notes version of the Vegas system? And will we see other teams follow this moving forward?
Yeah, so I think that they definitely put a premium on speed. And it's not just getting fast players, but it's playing faster and playing more aggressively to get the puck back when you lose it. So a lot of teams, and the Predators are an example, sometimes when they lose possession, they will make sure that they shore up their positioning and avoid odd man rushes that are kind of created out of loose puck situations or not being in the right position at the right time. Vegas takes a much different approach. And my Cliff Notes version of it is, if you look at soccer with Liverpool, if you're familiar with Premier League soccer, they've played this kind of in vogue style of gegenpressing, which is just pressing as soon as you lose the puck and getting right back on the puck carrier. And that's exactly what Vegas does. They press early and they kind of press right as the team is making their turn up ice, right at the other team's blue line. And by doing that, it creates a little bit of chaos in the neutral zone. And it's led to turnovers, and you've seen it throughout the playoffs. They just frustrate other teams with their speed and aggressive play to get back on the puck.
Specifically with one of their players, William Karlsson, their leading goal scorer, solid player in Columbus, but now he gets to Vegas and they hit big time with him. What has been the fit for Karlsson to turn into the player he's been this season?
Well, I think you can't talk about Karlsson without talking about Marchessault and Smith. Smith especially has been great at finding Karlsson in premium spots where Karlsson is comfortable scoring. You see a lot of, and you saw it in this most recent series, you see a lot of Karlsson going to the net, and then he'll kind of curl off, and he'll get into the low slot area, and he'll wait. And he'll kind of hover around until somebody forgets about him and moves off their man. And usually it's because Riley Smith is working on the boards, or Marchessault is just creating a distraction with his own puck carrying. And usually what ends up happening is that they either get a shot on net, and he's there to pick up the loose puck, or they find him in the low slot and he's been forgotten about and he just slams it home. He's also great on the rush, and I'm surprised that the teams he played on prior didn't see that ability for him to move on the rush and take great shots while in motion. That's kind of a high level goal scorer skill that you could pick up in practice and drills or anything else. And for some reason it went unnoticed, or maybe he just blossomed when he got to Vegas. But a lot of two-on-one goals where he receives the pass and just roofs it right by the goalie. So he's a very, very skilled scorer, but he also relies on his teammates to get him the puck in a good position to score.
If you had to assign blame to why this happened with Vegas in year one to either the league and changing the rules or GMs not doing their job and not protecting the right guys, what does the ratio look like in terms of percentage of blame? Is it more on the league? Is it more on the GMs out there?
Honestly, I think it's more on the GMs. I think the system for an expansion, I mean, look, what could you say, you know, teams should have been allowed to protect one or two more players or create a different rule? I don't know. It's just hard to, there's so many different scenarios that can come out of protecting a few more players. Yeah, you could have done that, and then you really handicap a new team, and they, you know, they're in the basement for several years. But I think it's the GMs that were trying to get rid of their own bad contracts, or what they thought were bad contracts, not protecting the right players, trying to make moves for their own cap considerations, and they gifted some good players to Vegas that they made use of, and then they also gifted draft picks. You know, Vegas has a couple solid prospects in their pipeline right now that haven't touched the ice for them. So I don't think that they're going to be a one and done, and next year, you know, it's just a fluke and they're at the, you know, in the basement next year. I think that they're going to be competitive. So I put the blame on the GMs.
It's scary to think about, too, how sustainable this could be for them. When you look at now moving forward with the next expansion draft, when this happens with Seattle, if the expansion rules are the same, how do things change for Seattle in terms of lessons learned by GMs out there to prevent this from happening a couple years from now?
Well, I think we're going to have to see some teams that break the mold of their front office. There's a lot of recycled leadership in the NHL, maybe more so than any other sport, and old school mentalities towards how they do things. You've seen, you know, baseball has bought in and gotten smarter, and there's been a trickle down effect across the league, and the really wealthy teams are doing the same things that the teams, you know, like the A's did when they didn't have money. The NHL has to get smarter, like some of these other leagues. They have to hire new blood in the front office that thinks differently, maybe being a little bit more miserly on contracts or long-term extensions to aging guys, keeping their and retaining their young talent, and making smarter decisions about the players that they play on the ice. You know, look, you pointed it out, William Karlsson is a guy who just didn't really get enough of a shot. And that's a miss by the front office and coaches. And I think that in a league where you see some new blood coming in that look at things a little bit differently, that might not happen as much. So I think that that's really what needs to happen. We'll see if it does.
The analytical approach with Nick Mercadante here on the Midday 180. Let me get your take on this, Nick. Did you get the sense that teams picked up on the blueprint of how to play the Nashville Predators this postseason? Do they have a much better blueprint moving forward? And what is the self-scout for Nashville this offseason and how they counter that read that teams may have on them?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, you want to – when a team with that much potential and really with, you know, cup aspirations loses prematurely, and let's not forget they lost a very good team in Winnipeg. I know Winnipeg just got mopped up on by Vegas, but you know, Winnipeg isn't a slouch. But I think that, you know, when a team with those aspirations loses prematurely, everybody wants to fix it, right? I actually think that the Predators have a great team. They've got tons of depth. I don't know if they need to make a lot of changes, maybe a bit more goal scoring, maybe adding to the depth on the wings. But, you know, overall, is the book out on the Preds? Yeah, they rely on their defensemen to start transition. They rely on their defensemen using the points in the zone. I don't think that that's been a mystery, and I don't think teams weren't aware of that throughout the regular season. But in a seven-game series, what happens is a team in opposition can game plan for just that team that they're facing. And in this case, Winnipeg game plan for using the points. And they cut it off, and then the Preds didn't adapt. What they should have done is focused on working down low out of the corners and from behind the net and trying to keep the play or take the play down into the areas Winnipeg didn't want to go as they were covering the points. And the Preds just didn't counter with that enough to offset the goal scoring from Scheifele and Blake Wheeler having a great series and some of these other guys. And they ended up losing in seven games. So I don't think they need to change a lot. I think that they just need to be better prepared to adapt when teams take away their favorite mode for offense going forward.
So 1 year left on Pekka-Rinne's contract. How would you handle that situation if you're the Preds moving forward? UC Saros looks like he's ready to get some more net time. How would you handle that if you're David Poile?
Yeah, I think that you got to start to sunset Rene. Look, he had a great regular season, a nice bounce back, and that was good to see for a guy who I think really fell, you know, on hard times because of injuries and then started to age. And I myself questioned if he had it in the tank, and he had a good regular season, but you saw him get exposed in the playoffs a little bit. It's not going to get better by playing him, you know, 60 games next season. I think that they've got to go to either a straight timeshare or maybe even lean a little bit more on Saros next season. And if they do that, they're going to better prepare him to become a regular starting goaltender. If they don't do that, they're just going to delay that process and force it into a time when maybe you don't have Rene as your kind of elder statesman goalie there. And I think Saros has been ready for a couple seasons now. He just really hasn't gotten the opportunity. So I think that next year is the season that you really timeshare them and start to lean a little bit more on Saros. And then down the stretch, you maybe pick the hot hand going into the playoffs.
So you'd like to see more of a 50-50 percentage split in net?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think 50-50 and maybe even leaning more towards Saros. I know that, you know, for Rene fans, that doesn't sound like a great send-off, but you have to be realistic. You know, he's 34 now, I believe. So, you know, I think, and he's going to be in the last year of a contract. So I think now is the time to do that. And if you wait and you don't do it next season, then you're going to force Saros into being a starter after, you know, several seasons of being the clear backup.
Yeah.
And that's a tough transition for any goalie. So I think next year it's got to be 50-50 or leaning towards Saros.
And at 30, he'll be 36 in November. So,
oof, wow, even older than I thought. Jeez.
Nick, thank you so much. By the way, which team, we're all leaning Tampa Bay right now, but which team do you think Vegas matches up well against moving forward?
Well, I think the Tampa matchup would be very interesting because they've got their own speed. It's a smaller team. I think it would be an exciting series between the two. I don't know. I think that they match up better with Washington. I think that they can take advantage of the fact that Washington's a little bit banged up and probably doesn't have the team speed to keep up with them. Washington likes to get in the zone and set up. And Vegas, as you saw against Winnipeg, they can frustrate you from actually getting into the zone and setting up because they're on you immediately going through neutral ice. So I think the better matchup for them is against Washington. The better matchup for fans would be against Tampa.
Nick Mercadante has been our guest, hockey-graphs.com, the website. Nick, thanks so much, man. We appreciate the insight.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Great visit there. Chad, are you more upset with the other GMs now than you were before?
I'm upset with the whole thing. it's equal blame all across the board. I'm upset with the league. I'm upset with the other GMs. I'm upset with literally every other player in the NHL that plays for any of the 30 other teams. I'm upset with all 30 coaches. I'm upset with David Poile, quite frankly, who I love. I mean, I'm upset with everyone that had any hand in this. I mean, David Poile's team lost to the team 5-1 in a game 7 at home that lost in 5 games to Vegas. The whole thing makes me mad.
Reed,
here's the reason that I'm not putting any blame on the other GMs around the league. It's because those GMs were looking out for what was best for their roster. They weren't considering how will Vegas use this guy against me. So that's where George McPhee comes in this whole thing. He deserves more credit to me than the other GMs around the league deserve blame because they were just looking out for their own teams. They weren't considering how these players were going to mesh and gel together. And I think this system that Vegas is running where it's kind of not a system. Like it's just go play hockey. I think that may have been by necessity to see how these guys could work with one another.
They definitely gave them a lot of freedom. I think this is one instance where maybe collusion would have been a good thing. Right? Like if every GM said, here's who I'm giving up, so don't give up this guy. Make sure they get these guys and their roster is not going to be good because...
But I think that speaks to the expectation for what they thought they would be, though.
But
right?
here's the issue now, though.
No one saw the run to the Stanley Cup final coming.
No, but Reed's right in that, look, David Poile had to do what's best for the Preds and wasn't thinking about, you know, what the Columbus Blue Jackets were going to give up and how that contributed to their roster, but... Now the reality is the Western Conference is a problem on their hands. Well, Vegas isn't going anywhere, and now Nashville had, you know, we were saying during that series, boy, they're going to see Winnipeg every year in the playoffs. Well, now you're going to contend with Vegas.
Vegas, too, right?
For the next 3 to 5 years. I mean, if you're looking at teams built to consistently win over the next 3 years, I'm looking at those three teams in the Western Conference, and now because there was no collusion, there's been an inadvertent monster created out in the desert from day one. So now you got another big problem on your hands if you're David Poile and the Preds.
John Feinstein's coming up today at 12:20. He's friends with George McPhee, the GM.
Yeah, John loves the story.
Of the Vegas Knights.
Shockingly, best friends with George McPhee. Like, now, to his credit, he says, I'm biased.
Yeah,
he'll tell you. I'm close with George McPhee.
But here's the thing about Vegas, Chad. Of all the teams Nashville played this season, Vegas seemed like the fastest team. And Winnipeg, you know, they're coming off of the 7-game series when they face Vegas. It took Vegas, 10 games? We mentioned that last week. It took Vegas 10 games to reach the conference final. Same amount of games as it took Nashville last year. Vegas was going to beat anyone they played in this past round. And watching them play, I watched a little bit of 2 games. So in total, probably a full game of this entire Western Conference final. I'm with you, though. I don't see the interest level rising because Vegas is involved.
No, and look, the television ratings show that. I mean, I have never rooted for Tampa Bay in any sport, anything in my life. And I'm thinking about now, Tampa. You're looking at a Tampa Bay, Las Vegas Stanley Cup final. Do you think the league office is going nuts over that? Do you think internationally their ratings are going to be up with Tampa Bay and Vegas in a Stanley Cup final? It's just not going to happen.
I do, though, to Craig's point earlier, there's a part of me that thinks Gary Bettman thinks this is a win because here we are today. We've spent an hour and a half talking about this in a market whose team is no longer competing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're talking about Vegas. He perceives that as a win.
I'm sure he does. I'm telling him why it's a loss. That's what we're here for. Don't be sheep. A lot of the NHL writers are going to tell you how great this is for the sport because it's in their best interest to keep interest up in the sport. It's not good for the sport. It doesn't say anything good about the league when an expansion team can come in and possibly win a cup in year one. It's not good.